Welcome to The Experience Shift, where we share insights for healthcare transformation.
I'm Brian Nguyen, Senior Vice President of Growth at NRC Health.
And I'm Jennifer Barron, Chief Experience Officer.
Together, Jennifer and I will explore how the experiences of patients, caregivers, and consumers are changing the rules of healthcare.
We'll talk with leading executives, innovators, and thinkers who are challenging assumptions, turning data into action, and reimagining what healthcare can be.
So whether you are in the C-suite, leading a clinical team, or driving innovation, you'll find real stories here and strategies to help you lead change.
Let's shift experience, starting now. Welcome to The Experience Shift. Our guest today is Dr. Anthony Mazzarelli, co-president and CEO of Cooper University Healthcare, Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs at Cooper Medical School of Rowan University, and a practicing emergency physician. He goes by Maz, so that's what we're going to call him today. So Maz has spent his career exploring the intersection of clinical excellence, operational leadership, and human connection in healthcare. So I want to start our conversation today by asking you, what got you interested as a physician in compassion? The early days.
It wasn't something I really thought about. And then I became the chief medical officer of Cooper, where I work now. And our CEO, Adrian Kirby, said, look, your job is to improve the patient experience and physician engagement. And I'm going to make it easy for you. I'm going to hire a fancy consultant, and we're going to pay them a ton of money. And I met with the consultant. I said, great, I'll take all the help I can get. And I met with them, and they gave me a list of sort of what seemed at the time like mushy things. And they said, if you just get the faculty to do these things, everything will work out. And really, it was about being compassionate and kind. And and that was the first sort of introduction I had. And I thought to myself, there is zero chance I'm going to get this faculty to do this. And then I went to our number one NIH researcher, our top scientist in the institution, and said, hey, can you science this up? And he was surprised to see there was data, and then it had us look at more and more of the data, and then it became our area of academic interest.
So smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it, not a soft, mushy metric, right? But I know you would argue that you can quantify, you can measure compassion. What are some of the things you like to see as return?
So it's interesting. All the same endpoints. So all the same endpoints is if you didn't care about compassion at all. So it's going to be, you know, your margin, your bottom line, your revenue, your, you know, are you decreasing length of stay? Are your quality scores going up? The metrics to measure are, what we say is this is the pathway to get the results you want on the metrics you've always been chasing. Mm-hmm. So you can measure compassion because you want to make sure you're putting in the pathway to get those endpoints. But at the end of the day, we think it's the same endpoints like everybody else and who's looking to improve.
Yeah, so you're not creating a new outcome. So what are the barriers then in embedding this in the work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the barriers is that, well, it used to be not discussed at all. I think it's really discussed now, and I think people talk about it, but it's putting it on par with evidence-based medicine. It tends to be dessert. Like, you know, okay, you'll have your appetizer, your entree, and if you're still hungry, then we'll do a dab of compassion, rather than infusing it to be shoulder to shoulder with other things we do that are evidence-based.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like I could just keep going here. Would you consider it then a learned skill? Like empathy, we know can be a learned skill. You kind of fake it till you make it. Is this the same?
Absolutely. Yeah. I always use this analogy that if all of us walked out of this room right now and threw a javelin, we'd only throw it so far. If someone then taught us how to throw a javelin, every one of us would then throw the javelin farther. Right? It absolutely can be trained. This idea that your brain can't be molded or learn new things isn't true. There's lots of data on that. So absolutely, we think it can. It's not when people say, oh, I just inherently, you know, I'm not compassionate or kind. It can be taught and it can be learned.
So what have you found to be sort of the magic in getting clinicians to want to learn how to be more compassionate?
Well,
what compels them?
Well, if we can find the witch's brew magic, I'm in. I mean, there's no, you know, it's, we think of it and we've seen improvements in our experience scores, in our physician engagement scores. I don't know if those are from more compassion or compassion work. It certainly seems to be associated. I don't know if there's causation. But I think that the idea is to use data, and that physicians tend to be good at changing practice based on data. Mm-hmm. So you data bomb them on why this is useful, particularly with people who have a pretty hard science background. And that seems to be the thing that could move the needle for us as far as people paying attention to this a little bit more, which is using the same methodologies that teach them what antibiotic to give or what surgery to do, using that to be the data behind they should be doing certain behaviors.
Mm-hmm. So that leads to a new book that you have out called Wonder Drug.
That's correct, yeah.
And so in that book, you're really connecting the power of compassion to wellness and kind of personal wellness. Do you find that to be a driving factor? Tell us a little bit about why you kind of went into this new area with
sure.
it.
Sure. So what we found when we looked at increasing the connection in compassionomics, those that provide care, those that receive it, was that it did three things. It improved outcomes, it lowered costs overall, and it decreased burnout. And then we said to ourselves, well, decreased burnout, it can't just be good for people in healthcare. What about when you are other focused, even outside of the either doctor-patient, nurse-patient, any kind of caregiver-patient relationship? So then we went and we curated all of that data. And that's when we found the incredible benefits of being other focused. It's not just for those in healthcare, it's for anybody who puts their time in to be other focused in what they do. And you could, it could be very small things, it could be big things, but if you put your time in being other focused, it's incredible the benefits for your health, for your career, mm-hmm. for the teams that you lead. And we've been able to publish off that. We've published in Harvard Business Review with a Stanford professor in business. And you know, it's the same thing you asked, which is, well, what are the endpoints for that? It's the same endpoints.
Yeah.
It's a successful business with a successful bottom line that serves, you know, its customers.
Yeah, you talk about compassion's role in, I mean, the same health outcomes we're currently measuring, right? What about wellness? What's compassion's role in wellness and keeping people healthy?
Yeah, so wellness for those providing care or for wellness in those receiving care?
Yes.
So both. So I do not want to belittle those that do, you know, that push for wellness things, particularly for those in healthcare, like the hot yoga and long walks and spending time with your partner, all that stuff's really important. But we consider that escapism. That's getting away from what you do. And is it really the case that the best way to engage and love what you do and be well in it is to get as far away from what you do as possible? So that's why we were interested to see what is the role of compassion at the point of care. And that's where, you know, it turns out that the role is pretty significant, that if you can see what you're doing and know you're making a difference, you light up the reward pathways of the brain, and that leads to well-being. That circulates, you know, neuroendocrine hormones that the pharmaceutical industry spends billions of dollars trying to replicate.
Mm-hmm. I always thought that was a fascinating part of practicing medicine. I've worked in a supporting role in two health systems, largely focused on experience, and I've had many conversations that physicians often don't see the true impact that they have had on that human being. And a lot of health systems are trying to figure out how to bridge that gap. Like, how do you create an atmosphere where someone understands the impact, not just physically, but emotionally and all of that. Have you done any work in that space at your
sure.
health system to, you know, bring patients back to the conversation
we
in
have.
A meaningful way?
Have we been, you know, are we perfect at it? No. Are we good at it? Maybe. Like, we're trying to get better. We're always a work in progress. But, you know, that's really one of the signs of burnout, right? Depersonalization, not feeling like you're making a difference. And so once you start to get burned out, you're in that cycle where you don't see the good you're doing, even if you're doing good. And you have to connect the two things. The example I always give is there was during COVID, there was this picture of a nurse in Texas. And the nurse was holding up a sign on a door in the ICU that said, I'm just going to hold his hand for a while. I don't think he has long. And I remember seeing that, because that was back at that time where, like, family couldn't visit, you couldn't do anything. And I remember thinking, wow, that is total despair. Like, there is nothing positive in any way about that. And that's what leads to burnout. But there's another way to think about it, which is, if that nurse thinks about what they did as the most important thing they've ever done.
Yeah.
That there's no more important place for them to be than to be holding someone's hand because they can't be near their loved ones at the end of life. And it's an honor and a privilege to do that. That will light up the reward pathways in the brain and doesn't lead to burnout. It leads to the exact opposite, which is when you talk to hospice nurses and people work in hospice, you think, how could anyone stay in that job? But they see the difference they make.
Mm-hmm. What kind of systems, what kind of feedback loop can we create that is able to frame it exactly that way more consistently, so to combat burnout?
I mean, I think you have to point out that you do, I think, a couple of things. One is, and again, not to demean sort of the wellness world, I think it's important, but it's operational efficiency. Mm-hmm. It's that if you could take away administrative burden from people in medicine and have them focus on interacting with patients and looking patients in the eye and interacting, I think that's one of the ways that'll help. Because a lot of times, you know, I always say physicians see patients for free, they get paid to do paperwork. And so if you can free, so I think thinking about operations and decreasing administrative burden is a big part of letting people interact. And then they'll see that. It is pointing out these kinds of things, having these discussions. I think peer groups are big, coaching is big, all of those things. Again, not to demean escapism, but things that help you dive in and understand what you're doing to make it a difference, not doing less of what you do.
Sure. I'm a big branding and consumerism guy, so I've got to ask it. I'm thinking about compassion as a competitive differentiator, right? Do you think of it that way?
Sure. Oh yeah, it's absolutely. When we talk about it, it improves outcomes and it improves costs and it decreases burnout. The cost actually has two parts. It can decrease your expenses or it can increase your revenue. Mm. And when you look at what patients want on surveys, they don't care as much where on multiple surveys, where people went to school, where they trained, they care about whether they listen to them, mm-hmm. whether they're kind to sure. them, whether they're mm-hmm. compassionate. And so that branding, I mean, you see that branding everywhere. Like people talk about compassion.
Right.
The question is whether you're doing it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the old saying, you can't give what you don't get or what you don't have. What then do you think is the role of the health system in being compassionate to care teams, to really understanding their journey every day and improving that?
I think it's the role of any company. The role of any company is to make the people that work there feel valued. And this data goes across every industry, not just healthcare, that if you're in the ballpark for money, that people feeling valued is 5 or 6 times more important to whether they stay or leave. Mm-hmm. And that really has to do with who their boss is, right? People come to a job for a lot of reasons. They usually leave because of their boss. And so I think that, you know, health systems, our job is to block and tackle for the people that see patients and provide an environment where they can see the good they do, where they can perform, and where they can do the stuff that they love and act top of license.
Why do we sometimes have such a hard time doing that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying we do too, right? Yeah. Everybody does. And unfortunately, every health system in every country is shaped by the reimbursement system. And so the reimbursement system, no matter what we care about or what we say, ultimately has, you know, nudges and shapes the things that we can do.
Mm-hmm. You have a very interesting role in that you're, you know, senior leader, CEO of a health system, and a practicing physician, and an author, and a champion of this work. So, you know, maybe tell us about how you like to divide your time. I'm sure you have tension and trade-offs with those duties.
Well, the books really were a shortcut to the messaging of we don't talk about the books at my institution. We talk about the content of the books. You can't write books about focusing on other people and being kind to others and then give people the book and say, look at my book that I wrote, right? So we don't have the book in, you know, there's a, we sell books in our, you know, gift shop. The book isn't in there. We do talks around the health system. We focus on it, but we don't actually say, hey, but the book is the way to gather all that evidence together. Yep. and the research we do. So we're doing original research on these types of things.
Yeah, that's great. I want to get into our executive round. We have a piece at the end of every podcast.
Oh, is this like the lightning round?
This is it. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I should have been
just one question.
This is the homework I should have done. Okay, yeah.
No, and it's really, I mean, it's really just a recognition that that we're, you know, many would say we're in the crux of a paradigm shift, and we haven't landed yet where we're going. And a lot of transformation is occurring, given the headwinds and tailwinds that are, you know, affecting day-to-day business and the healthcare environment. Like, just talk to us a little bit about transformation and the transformation you hope to see.
I am super excited. I think we're in a very special time, because I think that even though we have, over the last several decades, blamed technology for our problems, I do think technology is going to be the solution to a lot of our problems. And what's happening with artificial intelligence and generative artificial intelligence, right at the time that we're going to have a big crunch with what happens with money coming out of the U.S. healthcare system, gives us the burning platform to really put these things into place that usually healthcare is really slow to adopt. I mean, the fastest technology adoptions I can think of in my career were during COVID, where things that would have taken years, we did in a day. And the burning platform coming when there's this incredible technology that I think is going to make a huge difference. I mean, I think in the future, there's two skills you need to have. You need to be able to use technology, and you need to be able to connect with people. And this is going to be a revolution in those things to help us take better care of patients.
Are those separate skills?
They don't have to be.
Yeah.
But I do think that you have to focus on both. I mean, people in the beginning of when AI started to be something that, you know, with ChatGPT and the chatbots, you know, I think people would say, and they still do, you know, AI isn't going to come and take people's jobs, but people who use it are going to take jobs away from people who don't. I think now I've also think about that, hey, we're not looking at these technologies to come take people's jobs. It's to come take the parts of their job they don't like and free us up to do the parts we like. And we're really fortunate to be in a field in healthcare where the parts we like are really good for us and for the people that we serve.
Do you think there's anything that's going to have to be relearned?
Oh yeah, totally reskilled. We're gonna have to be reskilled. But we do that in medicine all the time. I mean, when I started medical school, I remember in my white coat ceremony, in the very beginning, whoever was speaking said, half of what we're gonna teach you in the next 4 years is wrong. We just don't know which half. So we're constantly reinventing ourselves.
Yeah.
Like that. Thank you for sharing your insight. Thanks for joining Jennifer and I on The Experience Shift.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on The Experience Shift, an NRC Health podcast bringing you insights for healthcare transformation.
If today's conversation sparked ideas for you, be sure to subscribe, share it with your peers, or leave us a review.
If there's a topic you'd like us to explore, then we'd love to hear from you. Reach out at nrchealth.com/podcast.
Join us next time for another deep dive into how experience is becoming a strategic differentiator in healthcare.
Until then, keep pushing boundaries, and thank you for being a part of The Experience Shift.